Hello, Hyrule. Welcome back to the premier Legend of Zelda Travelogue podcast. We are your tour guides. My name is Pete.
And my name is Chris. Hey, Curtis.
Yes, Odang?
So I had a thought that I wanted to talk about at the start of this. I've been playing through Resident Evil 2 Remake.
Oh, right on.
And it just seems like Capcom has found this sweet spot where what they started doing with these remakes, and I promise, just follow, hang with me here, because it's going to make sense why I'm bringing this up.
I'm getting nervous, Chris.
What they're doing with these remakes is they're doing a more traditional gameplay approach, over the shoulder, third person, the older games, just with newer mechanics, touched up graphics. Mm-hmm. So you have the later games in the series, like 2017's Resident Evil 7 and last year's Resident Evil 8, which are a new type of game, first-person horror games, similar to like what you see with PT and Amnesia, something very different while still in the same genre. And then you have the remakes, which are the modernized classic versions of these games. And I think the fan base is actually fairly happy with all of this output.
Okay, so is the question, what Zelda game would you like to see remade in a new system, or?
I mean, I'm curious about that, but just in general, if Nintendo took the approach of every few years releasing a 2D Zelda game that was the classic Zelda formula, meaning dungeon, you know, like more linear storytelling, but then every 5 years released iterations on Breath of the Wild, a more open world, non-linear Zelda style game, and iterated it and, you know, built upon it. Like, don't stagnate and just make the same Breath of the Wild over and over again. If they did those two things separately, would you be happy with that sort of, you know, classic Zelda style being 2D going forward, and then, you know, the 3D Zeldas from there on were iterations on Breath of the Wild?
What you're describing, Chris, is kind of what the Zelda franchise has been doing since as long as I can remember. Because you got back towards Ocarina of Time, where that kind of became, you know, the mainstay for the 3D games for a decade at least. Mm-hmm. And then alongside those, you would still get some 2D games here and there. You know what I mean?
That's
like
true.
Minish Cap came out after Ocarina of Time. And then what, Twilight Princess after that, then, you know, I think Link Between Worlds somewhere along the line with 3D. Like we do keep doing 2D and 3D iterations, you know?
Sure. No, that's a valid point. They kind of already did a step in this direction when they moved to the Nintendo 64. But I more so mean structure of the game, more so than, you know, the look and...
Oh, you mean like the engine?
No, I mean like the dungeons. Like, ooh, again, linear storytelling. Think of Skyward Sword as opposed to Breath of the Wild, where you're more dropped into a world. Maybe you have traditional Zelda dungeons.
Okay.
Maybe you don't. It kind of doesn't matter, because if you don't, you'll have something else in its stead.
Well, I do think that as far as the 3D titles go, you're going to have a hard time putting that genie back in the bottle. First off, like, if we're not going to have 3D Zelda titles that are like Breath of the Wild as far as gameplay, what is it going to be? You're going to go back to Ocarina of Time style? No one's going to stand for that.
I don't know. I've seen some people talking about how they really hope that they get back to a more classic formula, and that they missed, you know, the dungeon structure and the going through and getting new items in each dungeon
You can still do that, for sure.
I agree.
Imagine Breath of the Wild. You're going through the Divine Beasts, and in the middle, you do one of those things where you upgrade your map by putting your iPad on a thing, right?
Uh-huh.
Like that, but you get a new Sheikah tool for your iPad.
I love it. I mean, it looks like we're already seeing new stuff in the next game in regards to time shifting of some sort with enemies. So, yeah, I hope they really expand that. I'm not saying I think that they should follow what Capcom's doing. It just kind of made me think about, you know, how you please a large fan base that wants maybe two different things and wants it strongly. It's interesting to see a successful example of that.
I think they can do it because they've already done it.
Talking about already done it, do you want to give us a recap of the episode we already done last week?
Ooh, mama. Well, I just finished editing the last episode, so let's see how well I do. We stepped into the Royal Valley, saw some ghosts, got lost for a minute, talked to Dompei, went inside the Royal Crypt, talked to another ghost who gave us a Pog, or half of a golden Pog at least, and then we're coming back here. That's the long and short of it, right?
And where exactly is here?
Here being beautiful Vail Falls.
Vail Falls is a good name, isn't it? I can picture like a t-shirt or like a sign saying, welcome to Vail Falls.
It's not bad. As far as, you know, other location titles in this game go, at least this one is sort of a hat.
I was going to say, is it not hat enough for you? But yeah, I forgot. A veil is kind of a hat.
It's sort of a hat. Like in a video game, you'd equip it in your hat slot.
Imagine if like when two people are getting married, if the bride's veil, if they called it a hat.
I mean,
what a beautiful hat the bride is wearing. Oh boy.
Now that is the name in the West, Chris.
Oh, I'm so glad you're continuing this.
Let me take a quick step over to Italy again.
Okay, let's get on a plane and
I'm going to see if I can pronounce this with the... I haven't spoken Italian in a very long time, so my accent's probably going to be way off, so bear with me. Cascate Turbante.
That's the name of Vail Falls?
That's the name of Vail Falls, which roughly translates to Turban Falls.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, not bad.
I'm glad they didn't say Turban Falls here, because I feel like Vail Falls has like a nice descent and rise to it.
Yeah, I get that.
But whatever you said in Italian sounds pretty nice.
Honestly, like, I know we already have one here in the West, but I gotta just, again, hand it to the Italian localizers.
Yeah.
Like, they're coming in clutch with the hat names.
Absolutely. So we're heading to Vail Falls. This is where Gustav said the source of the flow is, and this brings us to a giant stone door next to a waterfall.
Yeah, the only waterfall here at Vail Falls, plural.
And we're gonna do something that we're gonna spend a lot of time doing this episode. We're going to take this golden kinstone piece and put it into an inanimate object.
Yeah, that happens a lot today, huh?
It's going to happen. It's going to be a running theme. And, you know, I was thinking about this earlier, and it's like, I'm going to refer to Skyward Sword because we had a season on it. This is like if you were just, I don't know, walking around the Farron Woods and you banged into a wall and a gratitude crystal came flying out. But then I remembered, after a while with gratitude crystals, that kind of does start happening.
Where you just find them lying around at night.
They're just all over Skyloft at night.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's not that strange.
Well, except the one thing, Chris, the one main difference is that there's only a certain number of gratitude crystals in existence ever.
Oh, yeah. They should have put a hard limit on kinstone pieces in this game, I feel like.
That would have been something, huh? If there's only the amount that you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so back to this waterfall. Eslo's going to tell us that this waterfall is the source of all of Hyrule's water. And according to Gustav, the final element must be behind the falls. So all of the water coming from this one place.
It's true. I actually went to the map to verify, like, Vail Falls actually feeds into Lake Hylia.
You would think that if Vati wanted to be a nuisance, he would just freeze this waterfall.
Yeah, I suppose. Although, like, I don't know if freezing things is really in his repertoire.
I guess.
More conjuring monsters and throwing a tantrum.
Anyway, I guess what he could have done is... Well, it doesn't matter.
You know what else doesn't matter, Chris? That later in Breath of the Wild, Vail Falls becomes Veiled Falls, another location that you can go to.
Yeah, I think it's in the Farron Woods sort of area.
And what I mean by it not mattering, Chris, is that there's pretty much nothing going on there. There's like one shrine, and I think I saw a note saying somewhere that like, you can use Magnesis to pull a trident out of the water.
Is that not close, though, to where one of the dragons flies around?
I could not tell you. I do not remember exactly where all the places they go.
Yeah, I feel like it's not far off from, like, one of them, but I might be misremembering that a little bit. Anyway, no dragons at Vail Falls here. What we have here is a short dungeon that opens up. Not really a dungeon.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, mini dungeon is like one step too far, if you ask me.
I think, Chris, the word you're looking for is just place. It's just a place.
A place with hostile enemies and some puzzles.
Quite a few enemies, actually. I was surprised at the list when I went back and looked at it.
Yep, so we have a teleportation stone here. We keep going upwards, and it feels kind of like a shortened Mount Krennel.
Sort of, yes. And you sort of get similar enemies, too, to a degree.
Yeah. So let's start talking about the enemies here. We got... Do we have any new ones?
Oh, we sure do. Let me run down for you, okay? Returning, we have Sparks, Spiny Beetles, Helmasaur, Red Octorok, and Keese. New enemies, we've got Blue Leavers, Blue Choo Choo, a new form of P-Hat, which does not get its own name. We're going to address that in just a second.
Okay.
Red and Blue Rupee Likes, something called a Red Wisp, and Rock Choo Choos, all new.
Yeah, yeah. Do Rock Choo Choos appear in any other games? Yes, they're in Phantom Hourglass.
Are they in Phantom Hourglass? Really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Let's run down the list in order here. So first you got Blue Leavers, pretty similar to Red Leavers. The main difference is where they pop up after they've been burrowing. Not a huge deal.
Yeah.
Secondly, you got your Blue Choo Choos, which, hey, what do you know? We actually found a place where they exist naturally in the world.
Blue choo-choos?
Yeah, remember, because in the Temple of Droplets, you fight a big one, but there's none around Lake Hylia.
Right, you're right.
I have to assume the one that we fought there got washed down river from Vale Falls.
Wow, I guess so, right? Like, that's a great point. It's at the source of the water. Yeah. It must have fallen and come all the way
washed
down.
Washed up on a log, ended up in the temple.
I love that. Look at that world building.
But after that, we got what I am referring to as Bomber P-Hats.
Oh, okay.
I had to give them their own name because they are not acknowledged by the figurine or anything else in the game. Like, they're just lumped in with regular P-Hats.
What color are these?
The body is the same as regular P-Hats, but the petals and such are green.
Gotcha. And as the name implies, they lift and toss bombs at you?
They don't lift them. They actually kind of spawn them out of their body.
Don't like that.
It makes me wonder if this is like some sort of hybrid between bomb flowers and pea hats.
Okay.
That's not that big of a stretch, right?
No. I can see that, actually. They look like they could be in the same family.
So they just kind of grow them out of their butt, I guess, and then they...
I don't like it again.
And then they carry it with like these long, kind of like vine-like appendages that they grow at the bottom to hold on to it, which then eventually they drop the bomb on you. And while you're dealing with that, they then swoop in to attack you. They're so fast.
Yeah, it seems like a very strategic version of P-Hats.
These things are evil. They really should have gotten their own figurine.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing, Chris, is that you can't even kill it the normal way that you do it with P-Hats.
How do you kill them?
Well, I mean, first, if you try the Gust Jar, the boomerang, does not work. All that works is arrows, which given how fast these things are, not a huge help.
Right. I was worried for a second that I was going to eat my words from the last episode when I kept talking about how useless arrows are in this game, but nope, still pretty useless, huh?
It's kind of sad, but you know, we'll get to the good bow and arrow soon.
Something else we're going to get to is one of the most metal enemies in this game, the Red Wisp.
The Red Wisp, which I found really interesting looking that up today. It operates almost exactly like Bubbles used to work in the original NES game, in that they kind of like bounce back and forth off of walls, kind of a little bit unpredictably. And if they hit you, you are cursed, which means you can't use your sword, or I think possibly other tools too.
Right, yeah. So they can be sucked up in the Gust Jar, though, and you can shoot arrows at them.
You know what? I just realized we haven't actually had Bubbles or Wisps in these games yet, right?
No, I think the closest one that I can recall is... Are they in Link Between Worlds? I feel like they are.
Probably, but I mean, a bunch of other games just have Bubbles, which look more or less the same. That being a floating skull surrounded by fire.
I mean, yeah, this is essentially, for some reason, Capcom took a well-established enemy and just did a variation of them.
If I had to get... You have Bubbles around this point in the N64 games and possibly GameCube. I don't remember the exact timing came out. And they operate pretty differently around that point, where they're like a killable enemy that flies towards you through the air at different angles and tries to bite on you.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, the Wisp operates more like the originals used to do, where they're just kind of random and you also can't kill them, because in the NES, you can't kill Bubbles.
Look at that. It's all coming back to my Resident Evil 2 remake conversation.
You can say that, Chris.
Sometimes you do a new spin on something that works from the classics.
I'll let you have that. I'll let you have it.
Anyway, these are just cool little skulls with fireballs floating around them in circular motions. that's all there is to it.
Something I think is cool, though, with wisps as opposed to bubbles is that when they hit you and curse you, they disappear and like you're surrounded by that fire that they had, sort of like they're possessing you for a little bit.
And if you toss the boomerang at them, they disappear until Link leaves and re-enters the room.
Oh, yeah. Like, the boomerang won't kill it. It'll just kind of, like, shoo it up for a little bit.
Yeah, which is interesting. Like, it scares the out of them.
Are you kidding? Someone comes into a room.
They're like, no. And they just cower until, like, Link leaves and then they come back out.
Do you think a 10-year-old runs into your office with a boomerang and starts throwing it around? You're not going to want to hang around for that.
Yeah, not so metal now, Red Wisps.
So up next, we've got, really quick, the blue and red Rupee Likes. We've talked about the green Rupee Like before in the Fortress of Winds. I just really quick wanted to remind people that getting eaten alive by gigantic leeches is a money-making opportunity.
Absolutely. And on that note, let's talk about Rock Choo Choo.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I like these guys.
I think they're kind of cool. They're kind of confusing in the fact that, like, it's just a regular red Choo Choo that managed to make or find a war helmet out of stone.
Yeah, it has a little rock helmet.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. I like this in, like, the Bokoblin, oh, they started making clothes out of the things around them sense.
That's the thing, too, right? Like, once they start, like, making and finding their own clothes, it becomes a little bit weirder to kill them.
Absolutely.
The thing about Rock Choo Choo is that, like, they're supposed to be well defended and whatnot because of their helmets. But because their helmet is made of rock, you can basically do away with it the same way you deal with rocks. So, like, you have a bomb, you blow it up. Actually, a bomb would blow up both the helmet and the choo-choo in one go. So that's, you know, pretty good use of your remote bombs. The other thing, though, if you have the rock breaker skill, you can just swing at your sword. It doesn't even matter that it has a helmet.
Yeah, really catch them off guard there. The only other game these guys are in is Phantom Hourglass. I haven't played Phantom Hourglass, so this was the first time I saw it.
That's going to be an interesting season, Chris.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. These 2D handheld games have proven to be incredible for us coming up with ridiculous lore.
It's fair.
I expect more of that there.
Okay, so I just want to briefly mention here, these caves and caverns that we're passing through on the way up Vale Falls, there's not much of it here, but they do have multiple like entry and exit points. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a multiple choice, have it your way kind of situation. So we're like, you could get lost going up.
I would be surprised if you really got lost here.
Hey, Chris, I got lost going up.
Oh, boy. We had, like, opposite of experiences playing this game.
In my defense, I think it was partly because I was trying to get all the treasure chests and all the different bombable walls and everything going around here, so I just kind of lost track. For example, there is a hidden dojo here at Vale Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Split Blade is here.
Right.
I don't suppose you remember off the top of your head which brother he is.
Yeah, he's the Pip-Boy brother, the Fallout looking guy. Yeah, he lives in the waterfall cave, and he teaches you how to charge your clone move quicker.
See, I looked this up and it refers to it as the Split Gauge.
Yeah, which is like, no, it's the little cloner. Come on.
So you can charge your split gauge faster. What was it called? You can charge your little cloner faster.
Uh-huh.
And this is a pretty good upgrade, although I think mostly this is just like a quality of life thing. You know what I mean?
They realized how slow this took, and we're like, let's make it like a little bit. Sometimes when you drive people crazy with a game mechanic, you can make that game mechanic slightly less arduous. Mm-hmm. And people will thank you that suddenly a little bit less of a chore to do that one thing.
The other thing is you're not often cloning while under fire, so like you don't really need it necessarily. It's just a nice little thing for you. You know?
Yeah. It's better to have it than to not have it. I mean, you might as well get this.
The other thing, Chris, I have a question for Split Blade. Hey, Split Blade, why do you know about this? What do you know about the Force Sword and cloning and such? Huh. What does this mean to you?
Yeah, like, are the Split Blade brothers, like, hurdy-gurdy style big Picori?
I have my doubts about that, but it just seems odd that this very particular specific skill is a thing that this guy can teach.
I never second guessed that, but you have a incredibly good point.
What
there.
If it's like, okay. What if this guy just has like his own finely tuned and, you know, perfected cloning technique? You know what I mean? Like you get that in Naruto or Dragon Ball sometimes where people are able to create multiple versions of themselves. But the fact that you have this sword lets you learn this extremely advanced skill even faster.
Yeah, but like at no point is there an implication that you can ever clone yourself off of those spaces?
Sure. I guess if he has those spaces in the dojo, then that theory kind of goes out the window.
I don't know. Yeah, I think this is just a weird thing.
You know what else is weird?
Hmm?
What we find at the top of Veil Falls.
I don't think it's weird at all. I think it's a fun little throwback. So we reach the top of Veil Springs and we see...
We find a big sleepy fella.
What kind of big sleepy fella?
Well, if you know anything about Zelda, you know it is the top of the head of a massive Goron.
Yeah, you can't make out anything else other than the tip of the forehead. But yeah, this is an N64 style big Goron up here.
Or Bigoron if you played Ocarina.
One word, because for some reason someone did that, and that's just the thing now.
I have to assume they ran out of space in the item name, you know? To now, this guy's name is just Bigoron. It's this, that's his name.
So yeah, something fun about this little moment here, you can hear him sleeping, mm-hmm. and one of the noises that he makes, if you stand here and listen, is the noise that we use to censor ourselves.
Yeah, those were still the most recent Goron voice sounds, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think it's the N64 ones that they probably tone shifted just very slightly.
That's very fun. I like that a lot.
It's great. So we're going to talk about here Big Goron and his sort of quest. A lot of this is post-game stuff.
Uh-huh.
So spoilers, I guess, but we're not really spoiling any story
stuff. We'll explain why we're talking about this now in a sec.
You have to do the whole Goron cave quest in Lon Lon Ranch. I think that Big Goron wakes up when you fuse Kinstones with the last Goron in that cave.
But even then, you can't perform the trade you do with Big Goron until after you defeat Vati. At the end of the game, Bigoron says to you before that point, if you should ever accomplish some major feat, well, then you should come back and visit me again. Don't forget.
Which, like,
you need to beat the game to get this upgrade. That is the dirt worst.
Well, okay, hear me out. If there was a hero mode in this game and you could do that and then activate hero mode and take whatever you get here into a new game, I think that would be very cool. That's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, Minish Cap is kind of a short game, so I get it. But, like, the item is most useful in the final boss fight.
So, yeah, let's talk about this. Let's get to what the item is so that we can talk a little bit more openly about all of it. Basically, the Big Goron says, oh, what a tiny Goron you are. He says, what is it you have there? Is it a shield? Among us Gorons who know well the taste of steel, they are considered a fine delicacy. Can I nibble on the corner? And you could say, okay, or no, gross. You don't say no to things in this game. You say, okay.
Yeah, basically.
And then he says, if I eat it, you will no longer have a shield. Do you mind? And you say, okay. And he doesn't nibble on the corner. Let's be clear.
Yeah. He's a liar. He just chews the whole thing.
This is a tic-tac to him. This tiny shield.
He keeps the whole thing. He chews on it for 10 Gregorian minutes.
Then he says, it has a deep, rich taste, surpassing even the great praise I have heard. Implying that a second ago, when he said that he's well acquainted with the taste of steel, he's never actually tasted steel. He's just heard people talk about it.
This guy's a stinker.
Yeah, but okay, fine. Everyone lies to Link a little bit. Everyone does a little trial with Link. We've established that. So then what you do is you wait 10 or so minutes of real in-game time. And then he says, thank you so much. Now I finally know the legendary taste of a shield, and I will happily fulfill my promise. He never made a promise with us, but okay, fine.
Hey, Chris.
No. You don't do this, because I'm going to do this to you.
Denied.
He says, let me just spit your shield back out again. Hey, Pete, what does a shield taste like? A small shield. What does it taste like?
Well, Chris, similar to last episode where I had you enter Genie mode, I'm going to enter Goron mode here for a second.
Yeah, Genie mode, where you asked me what the taste of a human being in a hat tastes like.
No, no, I asked what their spirit soul energy tastes like. Different.
All right, let's get to the shield.
So Gorons, what we know from Gorons is that they eat rocks, right? They really dig it. They love the mouthfeel and the crunch of rocks. This, I mean, is metal, a little bit tougher for them. Possibly he was chewing it like gum. That's why he still spat it out after.
Okay.
I'm gonna guess that, like, you're getting similar nutrients out of the shield as you would get from, like, rocks, but, like, the good stuff that stays in the metal. You know what I mean? The stuff that's really hard to get out.
Okay.
So I'm gonna say it probably tastes like, possibly, like, biting into a lemon.
Okay. I can, you know, that's a weird thing to say, but I can kind of follow you on that, I think.
Possibly like, you know, something stronger like a grapefruit, but I feel like it's probably like tart. It just stays there the more you chew on it. Well, then again, maybe not, because your shield comes out different, so he's already sapped out all the flavor.
That's true. Yeah, I kind of picture this being like, you know when you eat like a full artichoke, but like you have to peel off the leaf and then you scrape the innards, I guess, off of the leaf with your teeth?
Sort of.
Okay, so it's like you peel off each leaf and then there's like some kind of breading within the leaves, mm-hmm. and you kind of just scrape off the breading between your teeth. You never eat the actual leaves themselves.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not a fun time.
Right, so I feel like this is like that, except what he's scraping off is just Octorok rocks and... You know,
oh, interesting.
Choo-choo sap, and it's just a seasoning du jour of all this weird enemy stuff.
So it's just like the equivalent of a diner garbage plate, but like just all the stuff you fought up till now.
Yeah, it's a bad guy buffet.
I can get behind that, actually. That's a pretty good answer.
The one thing that goes against it is him explicitly saying that he wants the taste of steel, but I also don't trust that he knows what he's talking about.
No, at this point, he already lied to us once.
So as Pete mentioned a second ago, he's going to spit the shield back out, and it's going to be a different shape than when it went into his mouth. He says, oh, it seems like your shield changed shape as I was chewing on it. I'm sure it's fine. It's still a shield after all. Well, I have to go now. Goodbye. And then he proceeds to just stand there.
Oh, expecting us to leave first.
Mm-hmm. But so then we have the mirror shield. Ta-da, we got the mirror shield.
Wow, what fanfare.
The mirror shield in my mind is always the Majora's Mask mirror shield with the face.
Me too.
Right? Yeah. It's just such an iconic version of it. This is kind of just a steel shield with a Triforce on it and a blue outline.
That, I think it's the mirror shield from Wind Waker. I could be wrong about that.
That would make a lot of sense. So do you know how the mirror shield functions in this game?
Yeah, I do. It's kind of pretty tight on its own, to be honest, although like it turns any projectile that strikes it into a laser that fires back. Pretty tight.
Yeah, pretty cool if you're fighting projectile based enemies.
So while I have a lot of questions about how this transformation happened, specifically to like an engraved shield, like was our tiny shield actually a mirror shield the whole time? Or did Bigoron just give us like another shield he had lying around?
He gave us another dude shield.
We're just like, whoops, I ate that one. Hang on.
I mean, we made out pretty well, considering.
I mean, he doesn't know the value. So, yeah, it works out.
It's just wild to me that this is the one shield upgrade in the game.
Mm-hmm.
The one new shield from the small shield.
Yeah.
And you get it after you beat the game.
That's criminal, honestly. I'm wondering if the point was that you save Zelda with the shield she got you. You know what I mean?
I guess.
But even then, it might not be the case, because a like might take it.
That's true. You might not have that going into the final battle.
You can just buy another one that looks exactly like it.
I guess, you know, if you have a lot of cleanup to do after you beat the game, this is kind of a cool thing, but...
Just don't get your hopes up, people who are playing along with us, about having, you know, a better shield before the end of the game, because you gotta beat the game first. And by the time you have it, you're probably not gonna care. Because you beat the game already.
But I will say it was great to see the big Goron again. And this was the first time I ever, seeing this guy's design was the first time I ever noticed that Gorons have the Goron symbol tattooed on their shoulders.
Sure, absolutely.
I love that. That's so cute. He's got like, you know, dad bod, and he's got like a tattoo that he got in his early 20s that like stretched out a little
bit. Petition to rename dad bod Goron bod.
I love it. Okay. Anyway, do we have anything else before we head on to the next part of this episode?
The only thing left for Vale Falls is the end of this little walkway here, which
that's right,
leads up to a little precipice, which has a constant, small, sustained, miniature tornado.
Mm-hmm. This moment I have here is the opposite of Skyward Sword's beginning, where a tornado makes its way up to the sky and pulls Zelda to the ground.
True.
We are on the ground, and we're going to launch ourselves into the sky.
Rather than Ghirahim, you know, using the poltergust to suck Zelda down to the ground, it's much different. Something that I love, by the way, before we even say where we land... is Ezlo's reaction when we arrive, because he kind of freaks out for a little bit. He's like, you saw a tornado and walked into it? We could have just died. We could be dead right now.
That's probably the best Ezlo reaction in the game, not gonna lie.
Reminds me a lot of a guy from Galaxy Quest, because there's one bit where someone lands like the hatch on a space pod when they land on a planet, and guy just starts freaking out. Mm-hmm. He's like, it's an alien planet. You don't know if there's air. What are you doing?
Yeah. That's a very good logical moment for Ezlo. But yeah, so we are now on the cloud tops.
The cloud tops. I know that the names of most, like, Zelda locations kind of exclude the from the name, but I like to assume that Cloud Tops does have a the there.
It does. It feels less like a named town and more like, no, you're on the top of these clouds.
Ooh, you know what?
You're on the cloud tops.
Actually, if you put it that way, where this is like the plains, you know what I mean? Like, you call, like, this is Hyrule Field, this is Cloud Tops. I kind of dig that, actually.
Let's get into the description of Cloud Tops a little bit.
Well, it's clouds. You are on top of clouds.
Yeah, you are on top of clouds. The theme is kind of just sky blue. It's sky blue and white, I guess, kind of the color.
Yeah,
palette.
That's about all you're going to get here, except for, you know, the teeny tiny little islands at the bottom. The other thing I want to say is that this variation of the main theme of the game owns bones. The soundtrack to Minish Cap is so good. I know I've been harping on about this the entire season, but it's just so good.
A lot of this is going to be you using Mulmits to dig through clouds.
Yes. The most of what we're going to be doing is jumping in and out of holes between different levels, digging through clouds, which is, I think, my favorite thing in the game.
Yeah, it feels good.
Digging through walls of cloud is one of the most aesthetic things to happen in the whole Zelda franchise.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It scratches the good itch. I could go on, but I'll save us some time. The other thing you can do a lot is gliding around on Ezlo. Put the old man to work, finally.
Mm-hmm.
He's been slacking off. But, like, the Mulmits, I don't believe belonged to the Wind Tribe. Why would they, really?
No, I don't believe so either. One thing that's pretty wild up here is you took a giant tornado to get up here, and then you just have the courage, once you're up here, to ride a bunch of other tornadoes that are up in the sky.
Well, these are a little bit different, though, right? Because the tornadoes you use to get to the upper levels of Cloud Tops is made of, like, red wind, which is very unique.
That's true. Yeah, they are... noticeably different. I don't really know what it means. But
I've actually been wondering about that. Like, do you think it has any connection to the people we're about to meet?
I think it might, because they are notably red and blue, like the area around them. Let's get right into it. We get up here and we see a couple of people that, to be honest, one of them kind of just looked like a tentacool to me.
Really?
Yeah, and let me show you what I mean by
that. I had a feeling you'd have this loaded. Oh,
right, like one that you would see in the world,
you know. Now that you point it out, this little girl does look like a tentacool.
So it's this little, I guess it's a little girl with red hair.
Yeah,
and her hair is coming out of like a blue hood.
Yeah, she's got like fun buns popping out of her hood there.
Yeah, and she's got like a red dress on. I believe that this is Haley, who says, normally surface dwellers can't walk on the clouds like we do. My sister and I went to the Picori Festival in Hyrule Town, and when we came back, there were monsters everywhere. I bet if I could just fuse a kinstone, I could call a good homeward win. But there are monsters about, so I can't search for kinstones. And even if I could, I can't find anyone to fuse them with. You look pretty strong. Do you think you could search for us?
Well, first, I haven't said a word to you, but yes, I will do this. Second thing, I will confirm, they were there at the festival.
Yeah, I think we kind of mentioned it.
Yeah, I think you brushed upon it really quick.
Yeah, the Wind Tribe was totally in the first episode in the Picori Festival.
That's pretty cool. I like the continuity there.
And to the right, there's another Wind Tribesman named Gale who's panicking. She says she's surprised to see you, but claims it must be because you're pure of heart. You're able to walk on the clouds, and she says that she went down with her sister for the Picori Festival, but on their way home, they lost the wind entirely, and now they can't get home.
I have two main questions about this, okay? The fact that the Wind Tribe can stand on the clouds, is that related to their mastery over the wind, or are they also pure of heart?
Well, you don't have a mastery of the wind, so it would have to be because pure of heart.
I guess, maybe, but like...
It's explained away in this one line of dialogue from Gale.
I guess that's fair.
Which, good name for a Wind Tribe person, Gale.
Oh, yeah, like all but one of the Wind Tribe people are named after clouds, weather, wind.
Mm-hmm. Haley, ha ha.
Yeah, exactly. Other question, how do they know it works that way? Like, have they witnessed a surface dweller without a pure heart falling through the clouds?
Oh, no, I don't like that. So I guess my question is, what is the Wind Tribe's association with the Picori? I don't know if it's directly answered.
I have some thoughts about that later.
Right. So, I mean, we know the pure of heart and how it's established that that's important to see Picori, right? If they have some sort of ancestry with Minish or Picori or whatever you want to call them, and you're seeing them and talking to them, it would be safe to assume that you're pure of heart.
I guess that's fair. No, yeah, no, I can accept that. That's fine. I just wonder, like, are there tales in Hyrule of some adventurer who mysteriously fell from the sky, like above Vale Falls or wherever?
Yeah, and it's like, that wasn't the one. He was brave and he tried his best, but that wasn't the one to conquer evil. It was the one after it who was like a little bit nicer to his family and everyone, and then he went up to the wind and actually conquered
evil. Like, this man apparently died from falling from a great height, but he's at the top of this mountain. What happened?
Yeah. So we meet this tribe. We're going to meet more of them in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
But we've established now that we are helping them getting a homeward wind going again.
Which is kind of vague in description, but once you see it, it kind of makes a little more sense.
Oh, yeah, it makes a little more sense because what we're doing is we're jumping in whirlwinds, we're digging through clouds, we're picking up kinstones, and we're merging kinstones with walls.
Chris.
By walls, I mean clouds.
Chris, do not erase my whimsy with digging through clouds, please. I'm begging you.
Something I will say, though, you want a little bit of whimsy here. We got some cool enemies up here.
Oh, the enemies. I have some thoughts about the enemies, Chris.
So we're going to go through these cloud puzzles. We have 5 golden kinstones to find, and then we're going to merge them with specific clouds that are like the rock walls that we merge kinstones
with.
Hold
up, playa. Merging kinstones with mysterious clouds.
Uh-huh.
That's what they're called, by the way. Mysterious clouds.
It is.
They have a slot for 5 golden kinstones, which you find around here, presumably broken off and carried by monsters or put in chests, etc. That's fine. I have no quarrel with that. These are golden kinstones again, Chris. Okay?
Oh, like royal kinstones?
Royal, possibly. Where else have we seen golden kinstones?
We saw it in the last episode with Gustav.
We saw it from Gustav with a way to get into Vale Falls. We also saw it in Castor Wilds as the way to get into the Wind Ruins.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain you only ever see golden kinstones in relation to the Wind Tribe.
Yeah, actually, at the end of the day, you're right.
Since the legends, since the start of the game, say that the Picori originally descended from the sky, that adds up, that they would have that, because the Picori are from here.
Okay, so are you saying the Picori descending from the sky means that Picori are a later generation of the Wind Tribe?
No, not at all. I'm mostly thinking that the Wind Tribe and the Minish lived together for a while or something like that.
Ah.
You know what I mean? Now they live in secret down on Hyrule. But originally, they operated with these golden kinstones, possibly as the original kinstones.
Oh, and then everything else is like a manufactured, like human-made version of these amazing, novel, rare things.
You got these special relics made of gold that the Wind Tribe and the Minish use in order to like lock and unlock their passage back home from the surface. And then you've got later the hurdy-gurdy man's cheap plastic imitation that he hands out to children.
I love it. I'm 100% on board. That's it. That's what happened.
But in any case, we were about to talk about monsters.
We really only have two in this specific area. Do you want to rattle them off?
I would like to go one at a time.
Because one is a lot more exciting than the other.
First up, we've got cloud piranhas, which, Chris, when you first saw these, was piranha the first thing that came to mind?
No, but it makes sense kind of looking at a static image of them.
Yeah.
I call them some kind of sharks in my notes.
Yeah, you mostly ever see them just as their long shark-like fin coming out of the clouds. Also one of the coolest things in the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the main body itself is like round and, you know, piranha-like. So I get that at least.
So these guys swim underneath, or not underneath, but within the clouds, and then kind of jump up and bite at you and then go back into the clouds. Something very funny about these guys is like one legitimate strategy to take them out is to hang out like right by the ledge of a cloud, have it jump at you, then like Roadrunner style, just like move to the side.
The Wile E. Coyote method.
Yeah, and just the piranha will just fall, plummet. And you've got to imagine that there's someone on Lon Lon Ranch that's just doing their farming and a piranha falls out of the sky.
This is how myths and legends happen, Chris. You got to be careful with this stuff.
Absolutely.
So this is like a huge blue fish with an armored upper half. You can't attack the fin. The other thing, I promise you, they are faster than you gather just by watching them. Trying to kill them up close with a sword is like not the optimal way to do it. The best two ways are, one, the Wile E. Coyote method that Chris just described, but also you can hit them with the cane Apache, which will flip them out of the cloud and you can just go to town with the sword.
I don't know if I did that, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Cane of Pachi, underrated weapon.
One of the best, I'm going to say it, one of the best Zelda tools in history.
All right, well, we'll have that discussion at the end of the season.
The next enemy we have is straight up Mushroom Kingdom Lakitu.
You bet.
Smash Brothers Cinematic Universe confirmed.
Yeah, these Lakitus, they have their own little clouds that they hover above you in, and they toss down lightning bolts.
Something just so strange about this is that they don't even cover it up by calling it something else. Its figurine description calls it Lakitu. There's no masking it like what they do with bomb soldiers, quote-unquote.
I mean, this is kind of like how Link's Awakening has Chomp Chomp.
I mean, but that's like a dream, though, you know?
I guess.
Capcom, just out here in the early 2000s saying, we're doing this specifically to confuse Pete in a few years.
One thing that I found confused me a little bit is if you use the gust jar to suck the cloud away from this thing.
Oh, yeah.
You see his little feet. In a way that you never really do in the Mario games, not to my recollection.
Not often. I don't think so.
It becomes like a beached Lakitu.
Yeah, I mean, but then they usually just fall straight back down to the surface, right?
Yeah, it's always cool to see cross-franchise enemies in these games. It's always a fun little surprise.
And you say cool, I say confusing.
Yeah, I like it.
This is a franchise with lore, interacting with one that plainly does not. But in any case, they're easy enough to defeat. Ranged weapons almost universally work, so you don't really have a lot to worry about.
So we're kind of navigating through these enemies, opening chests, floating from cloud island to cloud island. Something weird I noticed at this point of the game, I've got to send you this picture. By the way, I haven't explicitly said this yet. A lot of the pictures that I say in the episode that I'm going to send Pete, I'll upload on the Instagram. So if you ever want to reference some of the stuff that Pete and I are talking about directly, I try to get as much of that stuff on the Instagram when the episodes go up as possible.
Right.
So check us out at Hyrule Pod on Instagram. We'll say it again at the end of the show.
Yeah, man.
Look at what I'm showing you here. Do you see what's happening here?
It is Link gliding on Ezlo above the empty sky, but still having a shadow beneath him.
Uh-huh.
How did I never notice? That's so strange.
Right?
Well, obviously, that's a part of his sprite, right? That's the reason we're seeing this.
100%.
But it's still weird.
It's very funny. I did not notice it the first time I played through. I noticed this when I was rewatching to just jot down some additional notes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he definitely has a little shadow as he's going from place to place above the sky.
Chris, I love making Zelda theories, even like terrible ones that don't make sense. I got nothing.
All right. As we fuse these kinstones, a bunch of pinwheels are going to start twirling. When we get all of them twirling, I think a big tornado comes up, or just wind gusts happen from the pinwheels.
Yeah.
The sisters fly away and Link follows.
It does seem that the pinwheels have some sort of combined, they have like a combined force that, you know, either conjures or creates this tornado. My question is, how do you normally get home?
Well, I mean, that's what they're saying, is that there's usually a homeward wind that is out right now, and that's why they need Link's help.
But, like, do they land on the roof of their house? Do they fly in through a window?
That's the idea, is that they mastered the wind, right? We heard it episodes ago. The Wind Tribe have mastered the wind.
Well, how mastered is it if they have to, like, catch a bus wind?
I live in New York, and some people are a lot more comfortable in subways than other people. So, it's just, they mastered it. But yeah, do you want to tell us about where we land when we take this gust of wind?
Yeah, well, it's pretty straightforward. We land at the home of the Wind Tribe.
Ooh.
Pretty straightforward as far as the name, right?
It is, yeah. But this might be a familiar place, right?
Once you're inside, for sure. On the outside, it looks like a mansion or a tower.
Yeah, definitely a structure that stands out on top of this cloud. I guess the building is pure of heart, though, so we don't have to worry about it too much.
Now, would that be the building materials or, like, the construction crew has to be pure of heart?
Listen, we've seen the construction crew down in Hyrule, and they are certainly not pure of heart.
Or, Chris, is this left over?
From what?
From Skyloft.
Oh, boy.
Could that be possible?
We just struck gold. What building would... Oh, no, let's not. Let's not get into it.
Well, sure. Let's hold on to that for the future, because I feel like there's too many. The only thing off the cuff that I would say is a building that we know, which would be the Knight Academy, but it doesn't look like this.
You know what? I could see this being a restructure of the Knights Academy.
Could be.
If anything. I do kind of like that
theory. Could be the Isle of Song, also, from inside the Thunderdome. What was it?
The Thunderhead. Anyway.
But to answer your question, Chris... this place might seem familiar from the inside if you followed our somewhat vague instructions a few episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
In that, in Hyrule Town, there is a Wind Tribe stranger living mm-hmm. in a house in the northwest corner of town, where if you trade kinstones with him, a warp point will open near Link's house.
Right.
Which will take you to the inside of this home. And if you haven't been here yet, if you haven't been to Cloud Tops yet, go talk to that guy in Hyrule Town. Do this part first, because if you
yes.
if you get to Cloud Tops, it is too late.
Yes. So let's talk about what you're tiptoeing around. If you do this earlier in the game, you see a sick old man in bed. But if you have the gust jar on you, you can Luigi's Mansion style pull this ghost out from hiding above him.
Yeah.
Is that what's happening here?
Yeah, I think he's being haunted at the very least.
Yeah, it's getting super haunted.
Good news though, Chris. We are now officially certified Ghostbusters.
We did it. We Ghostbusted. So now we cut to the future. We made our way to the Cloud Tops. We found this location naturally in the storyline. And I guess let's take it from the top. We are on the top floor of this location.
Home, house, mansion, tower.
House, mansion, tower, Knights Academy. And this previously very ill Greggle is his name.
Greggle.
Is now in perfect health. He seems to be waxing his forehead. He's a weird looking dude. Do you remember what this guy looks like standing?
He's just kind of an old codger. He's, you know, an odd, lumpy old man.
He's got an incredibly large forehead. His forehead kind of looks like a toe, but he's got a little tuft of red hair at the top of it.
This, Chris, is Greggle the Great.
I don't know how he earned that title, but sure.
This is according to him, by the way. He says, in my youth, I was called Greggle the Great. I was even a little famous. Famous for what? Tell him, who are you?
See, I want to see the Zelda community theory that Greggle the Great is like a previous Link, like an version of a previous Link.
Oh, no. I have an easier question than that about Greggle, by the way, Chris.
Okay.
Why is this dude the only one in the Wind Tribe without a wind, weather, or cloud name? What is Greggle?
I don't know. Yeah, it's just like a guy.
I get the impression that like Greggle grew up on the surface not knowing he's Wind Tribe. You know what I mean? That's how he got the name.
Mm-hmm.
Except in other countries, Chris.
Perfect.
He does have a normal name. He does have a Wind Tribe name.
We're getting two for the price of one in this episode?
Greggle the Great, a.k.a. Hurricane, a.k.a. Grandpa Tornado, a.k.a. Grandpa Gusto.
Grandpa Tornado?
Grandpa Tornado.
I am astonished. This is amazing. Grandpa Tornado.
It's my favorite wrestler.
I wish I could make you name Link Grandpa Tornado in every game.
If you could get a long enough name, yeah.
Amazing.
I can understand, because Gusto is the name he has in Japan and one other country. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if they changed his name from Gusto because it's too similar to King Gustav.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah, that's really the only reason I can think of.
Anyway, so at this point, we confuse Kinstones with Greggle and his friend here, Caprice. So what happens when we talk to our friend Greggle here?
Well, he rewards us for literally saving his life. Because if you didn't do the thing we talked about, he dies.
Amazing. It's wild.
It is completely, entirely unique for Zelda. I can't think of another time where there's an NPC that you have to save and might permanently die if you don't do it.
This is a Dark Souls-style obtuse side quest. There's like nothing pointing you to forcing you into this direction.
That's buck wild.
I kind of dig it.
For this adorable little game...
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
You didn't talk to the right people to save Grandpa, so...
He's dead now. Don't worry, it's your fault.
Except he's not. Now he's alive because we did the right thing.
And what did we get for it?
We get light arrows.
Hey, those are important.
Didn't see that coming, did ya?
I mean, my stance on arrows in this game is still pretty much the same, but hey, I'm not going to complain.
This is actually a really good upgrade, Chris. This I started talking about this in the last episode because you had mentioned how arrows are pretty slow, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
This actually... Oh, no.
Wow, I never heard those words.
I was going to say it increases the speed, but that's wrong. It doesn't make the arrows faster. It does make them much stronger, though, because it gives you like a charge shot.
Oh, okay.
So even slower.
Yes, vindication.
Here's the thing, though. When I first saw light arrows, I would wonder, like, is this a new bow? I'm not sure. Is this like a new quiver or whatever, or a magic that you're doing to make light arrows? I don't know. I don't think so. Because my assumption, Chris, is that this is not light arrows as in radiant magic. This is light arrows as in lightweight arrows.
Okay. Oh.
Because we're in the sky with cloud people.
I feel like a game shouldn't be allowed to use light in one context for like 6 hours of the game and then suddenly use light in a completely different context. I expect you to make that switch.
I won't disagree with that.
All right. Anyway, so we confuse Kinstones with both of these characters. I don't recall anything notable from it. I think it's probably just some treasure chests and some golden enemy variants. And there's also a 4-bed bedroom with a bunch of beds and Kinstone pieces in between each of them.
There's chests with Kinstone pieces in them all throughout this place. You can actually speak to one of the Wind Tribe here, and they will tell you that they are so skilled at finding Kinstones that they don't know what to do with them all or where to put them all. They're lousy, spoiled with Kinstone pieces, Chris. And I had a thought. They are extremely skilled at finding tons of Kinstone pieces.
Okay.
We don't know who Link's parents are, do we?
I don't know how you're connecting this, but please go on.
Last game, everyone was from the sky, right?
Okay.
So this Link must be some descendant or of some kind from a Skyloftian. Not necessarily, you know, Skyward Sword Link, but someone with a connection to the sky. And that's why we keep finding an abusive amount of Kinstone pieces wherever we go.
Oh man, I'm 100% on board with you. Link is without a doubt a member of the Wind Tribe,
and that is why I asked earlier why we're able to stand on the clouds.
Ooh, I like that a lot. Okay, we got to keep moving.
No, I refuse.
So we're going to go speak with their elder. I think his name is Sirach.
Sirach, as in Sirocco, which is another form of tornado, I think.
He tells us long, long ago, and then an age before that, our tribe abandoned the place you call the Wind Ruins. With our magic, we moved our palace up into the skies. We are the Wind Tribe. We have been watching, and we know all that happens on your surface world. We know a small boy collects elements to lift the curse from a princess. We know of Vati and his evil acts. The winds tell us these things. The wind element you seek lies deep in the palace of the winds above me. When the blade has been infused with the four elements, the way to the light force shall open.
Well,
so it is told in the legends of the Wind Tribe.
Well, there goes that theory about Skyloft, huh?
There it goes, kinda. No, I think, well, yeah, I guess he is talking quite detached from you. Like, you would expect he would know who Link is and wouldn't refer to him as the boy who's doing the things.
Oh, I meant the fact that they used the wind to raise their home into the sky.
That as well,
could you imagine having such power with just wind that you can raise an entire building?
See, I mean, this is like one of those instances where it's like, well, of course they wrote that line. This game came out before Skyward Sword.
Yeah, sure.
But like us as people doing this silly podcast, I wish we could kind of like erase those lines, like just kind of scrub them away and just be like, well, I mean, according to the timeline,
what you really mean is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, what you meant is, game developers. Anyway, he says Vati may already know this, which is like, even if he knows this, how's Vati getting up here? He's not.
Oh,
don't you worry,
Chris. I'm wondering if I should mention this now.
What?
It is something in the very first cutscene of Four Swords.
Don't.
Okay.
Remember this moment.
I'll hold on to it.
6 months from now. Just keep this memory,
Chris,
in your mind.
You're going to get mad.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. He says, surface dwellers are not permitted to enter our palace, but you are special. You may continue to the roof. We're back on your theory. Link is a Minish. Link is a Wind Tribe member.
Wait, what? Link is a Minish?
Link is a Wind Tribe member.
Link is a Lakitu.
Link is a Lakitu. Link is a choo-choo. He says, surface dwellers are not permitted, but you are special. So, I mean, it could, you know.
I mean, yeah.
Anyway, we make our way up to the roof of this structure behind him, and we take a tornado up to where we will be discussing the next episode, the Palace of Winds, our next dungeon.
One of my favorite dungeons in the game. I'm honestly very excited for it.
It's cool. We also keep saying that each dungeon is one of our favorite dungeons. We've said that every dungeon. Pete, I'm the one who's editing the dungeon episodes. We've said that about every dungeon in the past 3 or 4 dungeons.
I'm not so sure about the first one or the second
one. Not the first one. You're right. Not the first one or two. We've said that about every one of them since then. Anyway, so yeah, I guess at this point we can go through some of our Tyrannosaurus recommendations.
Oh, we're back on this, huh? Okay.
We've always been on this, baby.
Nope, not true. You didn't do it in the last episode. I thought you were doing me a favor.
The last episode you edited. So we're going to talk about our
travel recommendations.
Our travel recommendations, our favorite photo op. Our
recommended attraction
and our recommended thing to eat, our best bite.
Heck yes.
What's your photo op?
My photo op might be considered cheating. Okay.
Okay, good start.
Strap a GoPro to your forehead and you ride up from Vail Falls to the cloud tops.
Oh, I like that.
Oh yeah.
That's kind of not too far off from my attraction.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, that's a great call. But I mean, that's not a photo. That's like a video. That's a YouTube video.
Well, like
video.
Like I said, it's kind of cheating, you know what I mean? Like the only other idea I had was to take photos of Hyrule from up above, you know what I mean?
Sure. My photo op is you get on that big Goron's head. And you take a picture up there.
Oh, I want a selfie with Bigoron. I want that.
Get a selfie on Bigoron. If he's cool with it.
He better be cool with it.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it worked out in our favor, but he kind of deceived us.
He did. Yeah, that could have gone one of two ways. Pete, what is your best attraction?
My recommended attraction is 0G tornado riding.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Put on one of those wind suits with the webbing between like the arms and legs.
That would be a lot of fun. Mine is kind of the inverse of that. It's just skydiving through the wind tops.
It's pretty good.
Kind of that jumping up and down. You can make a fun little course out of that, like a little go-kart course.
A go-kart course, it sounds significantly harder.
I mean, if you've mastered the wind.
But has your car mastered the wind?
They could figure it out. It's whatever that red stuff is in the tornadoes up there. They got it.
Oh, okay. I can harness that for power.
Pete?
Yes?
What's your best bite?
I'm going to ask you, what do you think my best bite is?
Probably some grim stuff with the Lakitu.
I understand where you're coming from, but no. My best bite is a cloud. Listen.
That's very unlike you.
Listen, listen.
That would be my last guess.
If you can step on a cloud, if you can dig through a cloud, if you can trade kin stones with a cloud, you better believe you can chomp into a cloud.
Hey, Pete.
Yes, sir.
What does a cloud taste like?
Here's the crazy thing. I don't expect much from the flavor. But
I would imagine
that texture, though,
like cotton candy,
a cloud that you can step on that can sustain your weight. Like, you better believe that clouds are the best bite there is.
OK, we've been recording for an hour and a half. I'll pretend that what you just said makes sense.
It's like I imagine like the texture of eating one of these clouds would be like biting into if cotton candy occurred naturally in nature, like it's hardy, you know?
I get that.
Yeah.
It definitely has that look to it. It would be like a very light version of cotton candy. Like if as an adult you ate cotton candy, it didn't just feel awful afterwards. Like your teeth didn't hurt.
Sure.
You didn't have a stomach ache an hour later. That's probably
something about digging through the clouds and everything like filled me with such joy. And I'm like, I want to just grab a fistful and just try it. You know,
I agree with you. My best bite is I'm looking at these rock choo-choo.
Really?
And they kind of look like these like whole grain cereals, like these oat cereals where they mash all these different types of oats together. But like they also come pre-built with like the strawberries.
So when,
because like that's whatever the red is in them.
So a Nutri-Grain bar?
Kind of, but make it a cereal, right? Like put a ton of sugar in the red part and then you mash up the rock part.
Chris, it's rare that we do two in one episode. But what does a rock choo-choo taste like?
This is the third one, I think, if I'm counting correctly.
Is it?
I think we did one at the start of the episode with the shield.
Oh, you're right. So you think it's... Oh, wait. Yeah, you kind of just did say, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, like an OD... I mean, it's rock, right? So, like,
It's straight up rock.
Okay, but...
But...
That... Big Goron seemed to really like it.
He sure did.
So maybe he's onto something.
Well, I'll say this. In Legend of Zelda, Age of Calamity, there is a small aside in one cutscene, maybe two cutscenes, where you actually see Link be handed a rock roast from a Goron. And then they cut to another character and cut back to Link. He's eaten it.
There you go. The prophecies have foretold it. Eat your rocks, kids.
Yeah, you grow up big and strong, like a rock.
There you go. All right, so I think that's all of the T-Rex.
I feel like I should say, we have some pretty young listeners. Don't eat rocks.
Don't eat rocks, please. And
don't eat rocks.
And if you did, like, not our fault. Not our fault. Not our fault.
Do we have a Hyrule Business highlight today?
We do. This week, our Hyrule Business highlight is Borlov's Chest Mini Game Shop.
Borlov! The brother of Karlov, I think?
He is. He's like the younger version.
Oh, he's younger?
Mm-hmm. I think he's got browner hair.
This is, I think, the last storefront, like a store around the town square.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that has like a treasure chest with two question marks popping out.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like the most vague exterior to a shop.
You pop into the chest minigame shop, which, terrible name, by the way, Borlov.
Yeah, you might want to rethink that one, Borlov.
Well, I mean, this might be by design, too, because it seems like Borlov doesn't want your business. Or anyone's business.
It's very funny how little he wants your business. So this is going to open up after we get the Ocarina of Wind.
Right.
And what is the dialogue that Borlov has specifically? It's 10 rupees for one try. If you still want to throw your money away on such a terrible pastime, I would really just save it if I were you.
What are you doing? This is your livelihood, isn't it?
He also says, I'm telling you, that scambling nonsense is no good. You're better off without it.
Is it because we're a kid? Is that it?
I don't know. He's still taking your money. He's not, like, off the hook.
Here's a little excerpt from his figurine, okay? He detests gambling, but he has made the biggest gamble of all. Entrepreneurship.
Ha ha ha.
Which is kind of like his brother being like, that brother is called irony.
Yeah.
So he doesn't like gambling, but so he opened a gambling parlor mini game. You know what I mean?
Where, yeah, let's explain
where
this.
The odds are very in your favor. It's just 50-50.
Right. So you pay 10 rupees to play. There are two chests in the room. You pick one. If it's a winner, you double your bet and you can keep going. Yep. If it's a loser, you lose all the money you've been building up to that point.
Which, if you earn enough, Borlob will actually lose patience and say, you know what? You just win 999 rupees. Get out, please.
That's amazing. You win the most money you can have. Just leave. Can you imagine having that interaction at like a casino?
As a 10-year-old?
As a 10-year-old? So you get that if you do 7 wins in a row. Later, when you meet Spectre, the ghost that we discussed in our last episode,
yeah.
If you fuse kinstones with him, it creates a new difficulty with a third chest.
Yeah, Chris, this is a small correction corner I gotta land on you here.
I was wondering if you were gonna mention this. I thought it was...
Simon Simulations.
But no, it's not Simon. It was Borlov here, who is inspired by that fusion.
Yeah, he's very happy with himself. He has a new idea that can like possibly make him more money, which in his business that he hates and doesn't want.
Yeah, very weird. This basically triples Link's bets.
Well, only if you win, because there's three chests to open now.
Mm-hmm.
Borlov calls it hard mode.
Yep. And 5 wins are needed to get the maximum amount of money now.
Yep. Chris, I literally never, not even once, needed rupees this badly.
I don't think I ever did this game. I don't know that I knew this game was in here. If I'm being honest. Like, there's no heart piece here, so I don't think I would have funneled myself in here.
I mean, clearly this guy would not be sponsoring the episode because he doesn't want people in there. But we're going to give this him this little moment in the show anyway.
Absolutely.
So take your business down on to Borlov's chest mini game shop.
It's kind of like a... the predecessor to that Minesweeper game in Skyward Sword.
Oh, run by the magma?
Mm-hmm.
I guess a little bit.
A little. It's kind of a gamble, those. I mean, there's some logic to it, but largely it's a bit of a gamble. Anyway, I don't need to make connections where there are none. Let's go to the post office.
Heck yeah, heck yeah.
Yeah!
We have, I think, two. We have two postcards to talk about today. So we have a postcard here from Jason who mentions he's got two little theories for us that I'm going to try to quickly summarize. I'll do my best to paraphrase. Theory number one, what if the Wind Tribe are the Skyrulians, or the Skyrulians are the ancestors of the Wind Tribe? Let me know what you think.
We kind of touched upon that this episode.
We did, didn't we? Great minds think alike, huh, Jason? And then theory number two, I have a theory about the three big provinces in Skyward Sword and Twilight Princess. I think after going back to Hyrule and Majora's Mask, Hyrule was in a bit of a different state. When you look at Skyward Sword surface, you see that the volcano and the mountain is to the north. The desert is to the west, and the woods are to the east. When you look at the map in Twilight Princess, you see that there are a few differences in the world. But I think that the lands of those two games are really the same worlds, just differently structured. Let me know what you think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it is like it's all Hyrule, right? Like some between games resemble previous titles more than others do, but they all largely kind of overlap. I think the Minish Cap map, actually, if you rotate it slightly, it fits better with other ones.
The Minish Cap, if you rotate it, really?
I think, if I'm recalling correctly.
Well, you know, there's definitely people who have done this research and made these comparisons out there. I'm not one of them, though I probably should have before this episode. I'll try to make a note to, like, do some comparisons between the three. And then maybe we can talk about it in a future episode. But I certainly love this idea that there could be some direct comparisons between Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword.
Oh, yeah. I would not be surprised, to be honest.
I mean, those two games both came out on the Wii, so it's certainly possible that they mapped it out similarly as they worked on them both within a few years of each other.
I mean, that was also kind of around the time where they were starting the Hyrule Historia stuff, right? So they were caring a little bit more about the timeline.
Right.
So they might have had a little bit more focus on, you know, recreating stuff from earlier generations.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you, Jason, for reaching out. This is exactly the type of stuff we want to hear about, are people's theories about the ways these games connect. So awesome to hear from you. We also have another one. Do you want to talk about our other postcard?
We actually received a voice message from listener Nathan.
We did.
I believe he's a new listener because he sent us a message about episode one.
Mm-hmm.
We talked in that episode about how Link was in the bad boy dorms, right?
Mm-hmm. So the idea that the dorms were separated by the naughty group on the bottom floors and the good gang up top.
Yeah. Nathan pointed out that it's the boys who reside on the ground floor while the girls have the second floor.
Which? In our defense, I think it still kind of holds our theory.
Yeah, it's not mutually exclusive. I think both could be true.
Yeah.
Like
it could
have just shook out that way. You know what I mean? Like, I know Pippet is like down on the first floor too, but like he's kind of got to stick up his, you know what I mean?
But yeah, you know, we love corrections like this. I mean, it's awesome to think that people are still kind of going through some of those old episodes from last year.
And
pointing things out. So by all means, correct us all you guys want.
Yeah, by all means.
We'll read them out.
Might not agree with the correction.
We are a little bit stubborn, I guess. If you want to write in and tell us your thoughts on what a steel shield will taste like, you can write in to us at HyrulePod@gmail.com.
That's right. And you can find us on social at HyrulePod on Insta, Tumblr, and Twitter.
That's right. HyrulePod, where, like I said, any of the pictures that I sent Pete this episode, I'll try to toss up there with some other cool key art if I can find it.
You can also send us a postcard by dropping us a 5-star, hopefully, rating and review over on Apple Podcasts.
Absolutely. Reviews like that are a fantastic way to help us become more visible to more listeners. And if you have any friends who enjoy The Legend of Zelda, tell them about this show. If you think they'd enjoy it,
yeah.
We'd love to hear people recommend us to other people.
Well, we wouldn't hear them, Chris, but we would know it's happening, I guess.
I would wake up in the middle of the night and feel a little tingle on my foot and know that it's because someone told someone else somewhere in the world about our podcast.
It's good to know that you hear through your feet. I have questions for later.
It's for another episode.
But that's going to do it for this episode of Hello Hyrule. Thank you for listening. The next episode, we're stepping into the Palace of Winds.
Can't wait.
You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at the edge of my Pete.
And I am at a man named Babs, B-A-B-S.
That's going to do it for now for this episode of Hello Hyrule. Thank you for listening. Until then, I've been Pete.
And I've been Chris.
Excuse me, podcast.